So, now it's time for Bike Talk with Chris Kelly.
Yoo-hoo.
How's it going?
It's going good, Brian. How's your week been?
It's been really good.
With all the snow and all?
I've snowed in for a couple of days.
Out riding your bike at all?
You know, I rode it a couple of weeks ago to my morning show.
Good job.
5:30 in the morning, 30 degrees. But, you know, with all the ice, I didn't think it was a good idea this morning.
The upside is you rode, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wear gloves.
I didn't. You know, my hands were so frozen, it took like 30 minutes for me to uncurl them off my handlebars.
Worse than that. It's worse on a motorcycle.
So what's going on for Bike Talk today, Chris?
Today's going to be a really interesting day. We've got our guest Don Dragset in the studio, and he's a local guy who, well, let's see, his bike adventure started probably in 1909 when his grandfather opened John's Bicycles in Pasadena, California. He's a third generation bike shop owner, worker, industry person, whatever you want to call it. So he's got he's had a very interesting life, and he's here to talk to us about it. And we're also going to continue our subject of body language that was such a hot topic the last show. So we want to welcome callers to call in with that. And what else?
I think we could probably use a whole hour talking about that.
We could, but there's this really important thing happening also in Nevada City at the Seven Hills School District. Seven Hills School, and that's Steve Davis's bicycle recycle project. And I was over there yesterday checking it all out, and it is a pretty neat program they have. They basically take in people's unwanted, used, broken bikes, and they refurbish them. The kids at the school, the students at the school, refurbish all the bikes, and they learn how to work on bikes, and then they give the bikes away, not sell. They give the bikes away to those in need. And in this holiday season, they've got a lot of bikes going out. So we're going to talk to Steve Davis probably around 1:30. He's going to call in.
Oh, nice.
So we're looking forward to talking to you, Steve.
All right. Well, let's remind listeners, you're listening to KVMR FM Nevada City, 89.5 in the Valley in the Foothills, 105.1 up in Truckee, coming to you from Translator K286AN. Numbers in the studio are 530-265-9555 or 800-355-5867 if you want to call in and join the discussion.
And I want to take this time to welcome my two in the studio guests. I don't know, I think I'm going to get ready to start calling Kurt my co-host, because he's just been here for me every time, and he's great to have in the studio with me. And then my guest is Don Dragset. How are you doing today, Don?
Doing pretty well. Limping along a little bit.
Don just had a knee surgery, what was it, the 29th or 30th of October?
The 30th, yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. He was walking. We meet over at the Broad Street Bistro every hour before the show when we're going on. And Don just hopped right up and was almost jogging across the street. I couldn't believe it. So he's one healthy guy. And he rides his bike. He's 68 years old. He rides his bike on all the roads around here. So we're going to be talking about his rides, his experiences in life. So anyway, that's going to be great. So, Don, where should we start?
Well, let me chime in here on one more thing,
there's,
too, there's Chris.
Kurt over here,
said that Don just had knee surgery. I think we need to clarify that he had a knee replacement surgery.
Knee
so
replacement.
It wasn't like he just got scoped there. He's got a whole new mechanism in there. And
right.
And
yeah.
At 68 years of age, you know, sometimes the stuff starts wearing out. And I had a chance to talk to Don about this a little bit before the show, you know. He's very passionate about riding his bike, and it's, you know, the main way that he likes to keep active. So this knee replacement, I don't think was much of a decision for him to make, because he wanted to keep riding his bike. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to recover and keep going. And maybe, Don, you could tell us a little bit about how you came to that point and you made the decision and why you did.
Well, excuse me. Well, I was just starting to have some knee pain on the inside left knee. And walking became hard, going downhill. And bike riding became hard, like to stand up and pedal, as opposed to, it was not too bad sitting down. But I ride 3 days a week most of the time. I used to ride with the racers, and I used to race. Then I started riding with some slower guys. Now I'm riding with the girls in town that are riding, and they're riding away from me. I don't know where to go next.
That's just not fair.
No.
Well, there's some pretty fast girls out
they're
there.
Young, they're young. They practice all the time. That's just no fair.
Yeah, there's some amazing athletes around here, just naturals that jump on a bike and go. So, anyway, the knee's coming along well. I actually had a partial knee replacement. The interior whatever they call it. They put a piece of metal in there, two pieces of metal, and they whacked off the bottom of the femur, and they plug one in there and one into the tibia, and then there are two pieces of metal that work together against each other with a piece of fake cartilage in between, let's call it.
Right. What is that material they put in there anyway?
You know, it's chromium and something else, and I can't remember. I've got to ask the surgeon when I go back in to see him.
Well, in any case, you do have some aftermarket products now in your knee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not original equipment from the factory, is it?
They're made. this product is made in England. It's called the Oxford Partial Knee. I think it was developed at probably the university over there, but I don't know that. So
I'm incredible.
Not back on the bike yet. I am doing physical therapy and riding the trainer bike that they have in there, but the doctor didn't want me taking a chance on falling until it's pretty well healed up. So I've got another couple weeks to go.
You know, and Kurt, coming from a real racer's background, you know, in the real competitive scene, the top level competitive scene, you've seen guys that you've been racing with out there having this almost the exact surgery as racers and having to come back to racing. And so you probably kind of have some firsthand experience with friends or colleagues out there in the peloton that have been through this before. And what's their success rate when they come back from something like this?
Well, first of all, I say I'm very fortunate that I have never had any knee problems. So as far as firsthand experience in that respect goes, I'm glad to say that I don't have any. I do know a number of athletes, though, that have had different types of surgeries to get themselves back going. I don't know of any racers who have had a knee replacement or partial replacement that have come back. But I think the biggest thing, you see the highest success rate with people who follow through on their physical therapy and are smart about that and don't try to come back too soon. And it's just like with anything, that you build a bigger base and you're going to have a higher peak. And you know what Don's doing, going to his physical therapy now and doing all this, is only going to help to strengthen everything in the body back up, because you go through a lot of atrophy, not only where you had the surgery, but other parts of your body. And it's very easy to become impatient and want to try to get back sooner and quicker. And I would say 10 times out of 10, you run up against some problem if you try to do it too fast, and you end up putting yourself further in the hole. So I've seen great success with people who are patient and really follow through on taking care of themselves to do that. And I was just going to say, I think it's pretty phenomenal that Don wanted to do this just so he could keep active. You know, and with me, I come from a very active family. And actually, my mother and her husband both have had full knee replacements. And it's because they, you know, they were in pain, like Don said, but they also are very active. And as you get a little bit older, as I learned from talking to my relatives and people and, you know, myself, it's, the key is staying active. And so I think it's great that Don made the choice to do this, because he's very passionate about riding his bike and doing that.
Makes me want to get out and ride with Don.
Yeah, just maybe not today, huh?
Although, you know what, this is a good point in the show to put a prop out. I see certain riders during the weeks, you know, we have 4 weeks in between each show, and I see riders out on the road that I always want to give them a prop when I'm on the show and say, hey, that dude in the orange jersey and the black jersey with the black side panels, you looked awesome on your bike today. You were riding out on such and such a road. But I think the prop of the show today, I want to go out to this guy I saw on Brunswick Road yesterday. He was heading up the hill towards the Loma Rica Industrial Area. I was in my pickup, and it was tight because, you know, you had the snow plowed well out into the road, a good couple feet out into the road, and this guy was riding on the snowy, icy road, or on the icy road. It was the plow, so it was just, and it was evening time, so he was obviously coming home from work. He had his helmet on, his backpack on, and he was the real deal. And it must have been really tough for him, because I slowed way down and got by him without crossing the double solid line, which was another topic we're going to cover today, an email that came in. But this guy was really having a tough time, and I was almost thinking, next time I see him out there like that, I was in a pickup truck. I could have tossed his bike in the back and at least gave him a lift to the top of the hill. There would have been a lot of traffic behind me, but when I was coming back down from the park about, 10 or 15 minutes later, I had to be somewhere. I was running to my shop and running back. He was just getting to the top of the hill. So my hat's off to that guy, whoever you were fully dressed down in snowwear, you were on your bike riding to your home or from your job, and my hat is off to you. Everyone here at Bike Talk, hats off.
No kidding. I work up in that area too. I've ridden up that hill. It's steep.
It's a hard hill anyway.
I can imagine
so much
ice.
Traffic. Yeah, and at the 5 o'clock hour, it is gnarly just riding a bike on that stretch of road. So you put a little less side cushion because you couldn't see the bike.
It was dark by then, huh?
Oh, it was just getting dark. Yeah, yeah. He was out there riding. When I came back down the hill, it was pretty dark, and that guy was just at the top of the hill, and I was like, oh my God. So hats off. So Don. Speaking of the weather and not getting out there and riding right now, that's probably a wise thing. But what will you do for rehabilitation in the next weeks to come?
Well, I have two more physical therapy appointments. And then I joined one of the health clubs in town for 6 months. And I'm going to use their exercise bike, and I'm going to do a little bit of lap swimming just to try to keep things moving and limber. I will take probably my road bike out some as soon as the snow melts, and I've got another couple weeks to go before I can.
Yeah.
Before the doctor wants me.
Yeah.
He doesn't want me tipping over.
You don't want to get on the wrong side of the doctor.
No.
No way.
So that's basically what I'm going to do. Right now I'm just suffering from cabin fever.
Well, that said, maybe a visit to your house is in order.
I'd like to say, if we have any listeners out there who have had any similar experiences where they had to come back from an injury and would like to share that with us, we'd love to hear you call in. The numbers we have here in Nevada County is 530-265-9555 or toll-free at 800-355-5867.
That's right. And we also want to encourage at this time for people to hop on the KellyBike.com website or the KVMR website, the Bike Talk section, where you can email in questions and comments. And I'm going to read off a comment in a bit, but I wanted to get into a little bit more depth with Don about his family's history in the bicycle world, I would call it, not the industry, because it was just a lot more to it than that. Back in 1909, when your grandfather was opening his shop in Pasadena. It's a famous shop, too, John's. It's still a very famous chain of shops down there.
Actually, a few years ago, they forgot to pay their taxes, people I sold it to, and it turned into a Harley dealership and then, I think, a furniture store.
Oh, man.
When I was down in Pasadena for the finish of the Tour of California last year with Dwayne Strasser from Tour Nevada City, we drove by it, and it's just an empty shell now. 10,000 square feet of emptiness.
In 1909, the shop went through a few renditions when you were in 1909. Was it that original 10,000 square foot building?
No, it was originally, my grandfather came here from Norway, and spent a winter in Minnesota. It was too cold for him, so he
was from Norway.
Yeah, he was from the coast though. So.
Okay.
The interior of Norway is really cold, but the coast, they've got that Gulf Stream going down there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, in 1909, he opened the shop. Actually, he bought it from a couple of guys that were running it and wanted to retire. And it was in Old Town Pasadena. We drove by that when we were down there last year, too. And it was condemned when I was... In 1958, when I was 17, the city wanted it for parking structure.
Mm.
So we moved out to closer to Arcadia, followed by Santa Anita Racetrack, still in Pasadena. And I was, like I said, I was 17. I bought half interest in the business from my uncle, who was my dad's partner.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had it for, I worked there for 22 years. And then I've worked at the Tour for 22 years as an owner for 10. I don't know if you know, if you want to hear the history of the Tour a little bit.
Sure.
Was started by Ron Miller and Jim Rogers, who I mentioned when I called in last week.
I'll just interject. Don's talking about the Tour of Nevada City Bicycle Shop here in Nevada City. When he's talking about the Tour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anybody who goes in there all the time, it's just known as the Tour of.
Yeah. Anyway, it was started by Jim Rogers and Ron Miller when they were 12 years old in 1969. And they built it into a pretty good little business. And then Ron developed cancer and malignant melanoma and died from it in 86, I think. And he was about in his mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
Both those guys have been district champions on racing bikes, and Jim Rogers is still riding and doing a little racing.
Yeah, I see him from time to time.
Yeah, so anyway, I bought half interest from his parents, and then we actually, they wanted out of the business, so they paid me to get out, basically. And then I turned around and sold it to Dwayne and Connie Strasser.
And then you were still the shop rat back then.
And then
you're
I
the
was
guy.
For the next 12 years, I worked there.
Right.
For them, yeah. And they're doing a great job.
You got to just be a link in the chain. That probably had to feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did race bikes back in the 60s and 70s, early 70s. And
yeah, some of the guys you were mentioning when we were talking before that you raced with were sounded pretty interesting, too. It sounds like you had a lot of good company out there when you were racing.
Yeah, well, Bob Parsons won this race in the early 60s 5 times in a row. He rode for me.
Right.
And then we've been talking about Jeff Spencer, who was...
Jeff Spencer. Tell us about Jeff Spencer. Now, this kind of ties into what we're going to be talking about with Steve Davis here a little bit later. About his program at his school, because you're taking kids that are just kind of really don't have much to do after school, and you're giving them a little program to work on. So I'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I met Jeff, I think he was about 11 years old. He's in his 50s now.
Mm-hmm.
And he got real interested in bike racing, and ended up in an intermediate national race being second in the nation. Got himself back there with some other riders. His parents couldn't support him with it. And then he...
But you did. You took him kind of under your wing
and
made sure he
helped
made it to
him
the
as
races.
Much as I could.
Yeah.
And then he won the Olympic trials in 1972. Was that Munich, 72?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And he won the trials and on the track, match sprints. And they had tandems in on the track, match sprints, and he steered the tandem.
Wow.
And then after that, he coached the Honda motorcycle racing team up in Oregon, and I got them all on bikes. And he became a chiropractor after that, and ended up being the chiropractor for U.S. Postal and Discovery Channel pro team. He spent 7 years in France at the Tour de France with those guys.
Yeah, with Lance and the crew.
Lance and
helping them
George
succeed. Yeah, being part of the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gave me a nice compliment. We had that reunion down there. He flew in from Atlanta and gave about a 5-minute talk. There were probably 20 of us. And stood behind me and said that if it hadn't been for my helping him when he was young, he wouldn't have gotten where he ended up.
That's awesome.
So I it embarrassed me. I had no idea. This
course.
Thing was in my honor, but anyway.
Here you are. He's giving a little 20-minute, a little monologue, and you're thinking, oh, this is nice. I wonder what he's talking about. And the next thing you know, I'm talking about this guy right here.
Yeah.
Right, I think that's
awesome.
Yeah, and it's important too that there aren't a lot of people like that are mentoring kids in cycling now.
Right.
You know, and with what Steve is doing at his, the bicycle. I'm looking here.
It's the bicycle recycle project.
The bicycle recycle project. Yeah, it's the same type of thing, helping to mentor the young kids. So I imagine that was after you got over your little bit of embarrassment there. It was probably pretty satisfying to know that. You did help his career along, and it probably wasn't really, you were just, doing what came natural to you.
Basically, I was just nice to him and helped him when he needed help, and I can't say I coached him. Jack Disney and Chuck Pranky, two of the top racers back in those days, actually did coach him at the track.
Yeah.
he gives them a lot of credit for that, too.
Yeah, it sounds like you gave him a little life coaching that you weren't
that's
even
kind of good.
Yeah, he didn't have a dad that was in the picture, so
yeah.
Maybe I was sort of a surrogate.
And there's a lot of kids like that, too, you know. They don't have one of the two parents around, and, you know, they just kind of come across your sights, and it's like it's kind of obvious that, you know, that you can contribute something. So, you know, it's a good time to encourage other people that are out there. If you've got someone in your life that that you see, a kid that that you could just need a push in the right direction, you know, be there for them. You know, bad things happen when good people do nothing, I like to always say. So I think
right.
that's a great story and where you can end up if you just do what comes naturally, like Kurt said. I like that.
I was just there at the
time
when he needed
about.
Somebody to be there.
That's what it's all about.
And he's a wonderful guy. He's like one of the most polite people I've ever met. And very low key. And just a good guy.
Now let's shift gears a little bit back to 1909. 1909 was the year before Henry Ford introduced the Model T. And then 1901 was the first motorcycle to be offered pretty much in the world, and that was Indian motorcycles. And then Harley-Davidson was closely after that. So before that, you really didn't even have cars, and you had motorcycles on the road, but they looked like bicycles with little motors on them, and they still had pedals and the chain on the regular drive side of the bike. I've got a nice big catalog on Indian, and it's just amazing some of the pictures I see from that time. So I'm going back in time thinking, what an awesome thing it must have been in Pasadena to have a shop of that size and magnitude. Through the 50s and through the early 1900s, through the Depression, through World War One and Two, and everything else in between, it must have been a pretty amazing thing for your family and back on, maybe some history on your grandpa, and your father as well.
Bought the shop. Excuse me, I'm getting a little hoarse here. It was on Fair Oaks, and just above Colorado Boulevard, where the Rose Parade goes.
Sure.
And each one that was a zero.
Zero
address,
block.
Zero in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
And Colorado Boulevard, according to my dad, was paved one block in each direction, and so was Fair Oaks.
Wow.
And so they had actually had tires. It had advertising on the top of the tire.
On the tread.
That was part of the tread that would be in the dirt. It would say what kind of a bike or what kind of a tire it was.
Oh, man. There you go.
So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And my dad, my grandfather was still in 1932. Their shop was the headquarters for the track racing in the 32 Olympics.
Hmm.
Because the track was built in the Rose Bowl inside.
Wow. Wood track, nonetheless.
Board track, yeah. And they used single-speed bikes with fixed hubs, fixed gears, which you can't coast, and it doesn't have a brake on it at all. It's just kind of like riding a kid's tricycle as far as how the thing operates.
Yeah.
And so he did that. And then in 1941, he promoted the national championships at the Rose Bowl, but outside, there were sprint championships.
Mm-hmm.
There were no tracks around here at that time, or around anywhere probably at that time.
Right.
And he promoted that, and it was pretty good deal, and he got a lot of good publicity out of doing that. And then he. Let's see, lost my train of thought. Oh,
that's
he was
okay.
on
that's
the...
okay, it's allowed. This is community radio. You can lose your train of thought here.
He was on the 1948 Olympic Committee for cycling, Olympic Cycling
nice.
Committee.
Wow, yeah.
And he had the Pasadena Cycling Club at that time.
Neat.
Which was just a bike club.
Mm-hmm.
When I got into it, we started as Pasadena Cycling Club and then went to... joined in with the PAA, Pasadena Athletic Association, which was a multi-sport club. It was cycling, speed skating, figure skating, track and field.
Mm.
And Peggy Fleming, whose name was just red-haired.
Right.
And it must be another Peggy Fleming.
I think it's a different one.
Was on, what, skated for the PAA.
Wow.
And so that was pretty cool.
So fast forwarding to when you moved to Nevada County, that was
1980. Yeah.
Okay, with the year I graduated high school. And I didn't even know about Nevada County or Nevada City or the Nevada City Classic Bike Race. Since you've been here in 1980, you know, you moved up from Pasadena because probably it was just life was a little too hectic down there. You needed some change.
Yeah.
And you know, start riding your bike out on the roadways here. And this leads us into our kind of our next second gear here of our Bike Talk Hour, which is 130KVMR.org, KVMR 89.5 FM. On the road, body language. We were talking about it last show. It was originally going to be yours and my talk, but when we were going to have our show with you on the 15th of October. But, you know, I'll tell you what, the phones lit up the last hour, and we'd want to definitely continue this topic as well, and we always want to welcome it because it's totally real, for one, and it's a real concern of a lot of people, and we want to help people get along out there on the roads if we can. So from 1980 till 2008, what have you seen change on the roadways out there in Nevada County?
Well, there's a little bit of new pavement.
Yeah.
As Kurt mentioned when we were talking earlier.
But not much.
Not much. And the roads haven't changed that much, and there's a few that they've widened, but they're still narrow, and a lot of them have little potholes, and I can understand, you know, it takes a lot of money to fix that stuff.
Sure.
But the automobile traffic is the biggest difference. There's, you know, probably twice as many cars on the road as there.
Mm.
We used to ride up Highway 20 up north, mm-hmm. toward 80, mm-hmm. on bicycles, and we'd see a car maybe every few minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then now it's just see a car. I don't even ride there anymore, but see a few cars every minute.
Yeah,
and so that's I think that's the biggest change.
Kind of puts a damper on Highway 20 up towards past Five Mile House now, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. But there's good mountain bike trails up
wonderful
that way.
Mountain and Pioneer Trail.
Yeah, and I took up mountain bike racing just after we got here.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't mountain bikes when I had my shop in Pasadena.
No.
Nobody was making one. But and so I started racing mountain bikes and a little bit of road racing, but I was what they used to call a pack filler.
Mm-hmm.
Just somebody to make the start look good, you know.
Yeah.
I could usually finish in maybe the middle of the
You
field.
Were supporting bike racing, Don. That's what I did in my last years of racing. I'd show up, I'd pay the fee, I'd try to get a whole shot, and then I'd just get the heck out of everybody's way who's trying to do good that day.
Yeah.
I was supporting the event.
I actually did better on a mountain bike in the 40 and over, 45 and over category. I ended up at Bear Valley. I got second in the Norbert Nationals.
Yeah. At what age? What was your age?
45 and over. I forget. It was like 87.
Man.
So that's probably my best result.
Cool. Congratulations
of any
then.
Race.
Yeah.
But I just do it for fun.
So go ahead. I say that's an interesting point that you brought up, that the roads haven't changed much, but the traffic, the vehicle, motor vehicle traffic has increased. And I think that you know, now as we're seeing more and more people riding their bicycles as well, it compounds that. I don't know. I guess it's an issue, for lack of a better word, of you know, more cars on the road and more bicycles on the road. How do we deal with that, being cyclists, knowing there's more cars, and how do drivers, you know, tackle that situation, knowing there's more bicycles out on the road, so that everyone can still be safe, and we can all end up at home at night rather than in the hospital or somewhere else.
Right.
That's right. We were on the last show. We were talking to Song out on Bitney Springs Road, going up to Bridgeport. She was called in and was telling us of her concerns. And I think it's a good time to mention this email that I got from a fellow in the Grass Valley area who had a really, really valid concern. And he's coming to us as a motorist. And I'm just going to read the first paragraph of his email, and just give his two cents on this. And I want to thank Jerry. I'm not going to use your last name because I didn't really ask permission to use your name on the air, so I want to respect your rights to privacy. And here we go. A complaint. Some or most bicycle riders encourage drivers to pass them, which often requires the driver to violate the law by crossing the double yellow lines. There simply isn't enough room on Highway 49 or Pleasant Valley Road or most other country roads for a car to safely, for bicyclists anyway, to pass a bicyclist without crossing double solid yellow lines. Do bicyclists think that it is morally right to encourage motorists to violate the law? Firstly, it is dangerous. That's why it's illegal. And secondly, it is unfair to ask the motorist to always be the one to take the risks involved, both safety and legal slash financial. If a motorist, as a result of crossing the double yellow lines, gets into an accident or receives a ticket, is the bicyclist going to pay half of the resulting bills? If not, then how is this fair? And that was a great, it was a really great email that you sent in, Jerry, and I want to thank you for that, because it raises question, and there's a few different points of perspective here about your concern that you emailed in about. And since your email, I've been especially watchful on these roads that we're talking about, Pleasant Valley, Point and Case. It is narrow, and there's a double solid line. It's like new pavement out there, but there's hardly any room. And then the hardly any room topic comes up, where unless you've been on a bicycle, and depending on what degree of cycling you're at, whether you're used to being in a Peloton with a lot of other riders around you bumping handlebars and thighs and the whole thing and elbows, or if you're a recreational cyclist and you're not used to riding close or next to people or anything or cars or whatnot, it's also a point of perception. And we were discussing this before we came into Bike Talk today over at Broad Street Cafe, and it was some interesting throw around that we had with this. And one of the things that I also thought about, whereas this is valid, I drive a car too, and if I cross over a double solid line, what happens? I went onto the dmv.california.org, .government website, and they have the driver's handbook right there, and I think it was page 39 or 38 or something like that, halfway down the page. And I wish I had cut and pasted it for you today here on Bike Talk, but the gist of it was, when you come to a cyclist, it's very vague, I'll first say. It's very vague and not real complete as far as what you should do, but the gist of it was, when you come up on a cyclist on the road, and you should be very cautious and careful not to frighten them. Then, when it's clear, you should move around them slowly and pass them carefully. And they were using words like common courtesy as well, like we were last show. But the problem with that, and I'll be totally fair here, the problem with that that I also had was, I'm trying to give some definition to this guy who's emailing me and Jerry. And the images in the illustrations on the DMV, that DMV rule and regulation right there, or whatever you want to call it, recommendation, didn't have a picture of a double solid line. It had a picture of a white dotted line. So it is definitely, I think it's something that the DMV could definitely clarify a bit better, and I think that would give a lot of people a peace of mind. But it comes down to personal, your personal gut feeling, and mine is always going to be, and I don't condone this, I'm not telling people what they should do, I want to make that disclaimer right now, but in my world, what I would do is, a lot of times you think there's a lot less room on the road for the cyclist for you to safely pass, but in reality, there's quite a bit of room on the side of your car before you even start touching the double solid line. But the trick is not passing at 50 miles an hour because you're worried about, threading the needle quickly. Slow way down and just wait till it's safe to pass and you feel it. And it's good if you can get acknowledgement from both parties. Cyclist looks back, says, "Come on, wave through," and the car is behind and thinking, "Okay, I can get through this, no problem." Now, the other flip side that I kind of came down to is, I've been in a situation where a car has been following me up Tunnel Road in the Oakland Hills, and they're just following back there, and I can't tell what the heck they're following me for, and it's just following and following. So finally, I just pull over, and I look back, and I wave, and I wave them right through. Sometimes, if it comes down to that, as a cyclist, that might be the solution. So it's another solution I want to throw out there, as what to do in that situation. Kurt, you've been looking at the roads too, because I called you up or I emailed you. I think I forwarded you this email to say, "Hey, look, check this out. See what you think when you're driving around or riding around on the roads, as far as the space that you have on a double solid line." And you know what? This guy was right. There are a lot of roads in Nevada County that don't have a whole lot of room from the inside of the double solid yellow to the edge of the road.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. And there aren't many shoulders there, and you get that white line on the edge of the road. And beyond that, you might have no pavement. You might have a couple inches, mm-hmm. and then you usually have some type of rut. That's not like there's a bunch of smooth dirt there, like you're driving out in the middle of the desert. So there is, you know, like you were saying, there's a lot of room there, even if the driver doesn't think so. But I think most importantly, you have to err on the side of caution and give more room as opposed to giving less.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this earlier. You know, I raced bikes for a number of years. I'm pretty comfortable with, you know, banging handlebars and being close to a car. But, you know, you can have a car that's 2 feet away from you, but if they got big mirrors, their mirror might be, you know, inches
right.
away from you if it's a bigger truck, and that's something to think about. And the drivers just have to, it's safe to assume that people don't like cars coming too close to them. I don't like it. I can deal with it, but I don't like it. So it's common sense that we talked about, common courtesy. If you're riding on a bike and you see a situation or an opportunity to pull over, you know, the few seconds that it's going to take for you to get out of the way and let one car or a line of cars by,
mm-hmm.
Is going to save you a lot more time than if you get hit and you get knocked down.
I know. So. I personally would just explain it. If I were to get pulled over, I'd say, you know what? Here's the situation. There was a guy riding a bike here. It was an uphill climb. He wasn't going to go any more than 5 to 10 miles an hour. And it was very clear. I was just, you know, the driver's handbook states and is kind of vague on what to do. So I was just trying to make sure that I was keeping everybody out of harm's way. So... and I would just go into explaining it, and I would go that far, and I would take the risk. That's me personally, and I'm not asking the drivers and cars to do that.
Yeah, I think every situation has to be assessed individually. There's no one answer for that.
And Don, you know, you're out on the road quite a lot from 1980 till now in Nevada County. You've got the most experience out of all of us, and I think you've probably, how many miles a year do you put in on a bike?
I have no idea. I like to ride for somewhere between an hour and a half and 3 hours.
Every other day, every day?
3 days a week.
Three days a week?
And I don't have a cyclometer on my bike.
Right.
I grew up without it. I just use my watch as an estimate.
I threw mine away a long time ago,
and,
too.
it's more relaxing for me, but a lot of people really like to keep track of their mileage, and they know exactly how many miles they've ridden, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's especially if you're racing these days... it could be pretty handy to be able to, you know, compute your miles.
Yeah. So, but you're 3 days out there on every week minimum, so you come across this quite often. Sounds like we got someone on the line here.
Well, I had a caller made some off-air comments. Wanted to mention, just saying, as far as the car bicycle interaction, that he notices a lot of times that certain bicyclists will ride two abreast and not give that up, even though they have
right.
traffic behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then also mentioned that he found it interesting how bicyclists often turn into pedestrians when they come into intersections. And I guess the key there is that, you know, as a bicyclist, you have every right of a vehicle on the road.
Mm-hmm.
With that, though,
you
need to take the responsibilities of being a vehicle on the road. And so, like, if you were in a slow vehicle, you know, say going up the road, and suddenly you got traffic behind you, what are you going to do? You're going to pull over and let that traffic go by.
Exactly.
And so, you know, bicyclists probably
they need to observe the same rules.
Need to keep
road.
That in mind. And you know, if it is a narrow road and they're taking it up, they have the right to be there, and they have the right not to be unsafely passed. But they need to take the responsibility of giving the right away when the opportunity presents itself.
Right, and to kind of add to that, you know, a really very seasoned cyclist who spends a lot of time out on the road, 3 to 5 days a week out on the road on their bike, you won't really find that most of the time. You know, when there's a car behind them, they note a single file, whether it's just two of you riding two abreast or whether it's 60 of you riding 30 long two abreast, you know, 30 by two.
Right.
It's, you know, to single file out. And I've been on rides where there have been 60 riders. It was a common thing every Saturday and Sunday morning. Kurt, I'm sure you partook on those rides from Cal Berkeley from time to time. And we're snaking up Old Tunnel Road, and it's a windy road just like up from the river. And, you know, there's two of us, there are two abreast, 60 riders. And then a car's back. You hear the back guy shouting car back, and then everybody just magically falls into a single file. So... it's doable. It's kind of pigheadedness when, you know, if you're on the road and you can make an adjustment and you're the cyclist and you're two abreast and you just don't move because, you know, you want to make the car stay behind. That's not nice.
We got another caller on the line right now.
All right. You're live on KVMR.
Hi. I'm not a bicyclist, but I'm one of these guys who drives a mobility scooter.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't have the balance for a bicycle. I wish I did.
Okay.
But one thing I noticed is right-of-way issues, people will drive way off in the other lane acting like I'm, you know, wider than a car.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they are not willing to grant me right-of-way.
Mm.
Sometimes I have to claim it in order to cross the street because crosswalks are not near at hand.
Like they're in a NASCAR race or something.
Yeah, they're getting home in a hurry. Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me that it's more important than you getting across the street, you know, given how much it might short them for time doing what they're doing.
Yeah, boy. So
anyway, that's my statement, and I just...
No, that's fine. You know, where do you usually travel on your mobility scooter?
Well, I go a lot over... I live on Dorsey Drive. I go over the freeway on Dorsey. I go up to Briar Patch. I've been known in the past to go down to the Unitarian Church, which I'm a member of.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven to Nevada City. Lately, I don't go that far. This is a battery issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I go all over, and people... I wear two flags on my scooter, and I have an air horn, which isn't charged. But
boy, I like the air horn. What's your first name?
James.
Hey, I want to put a word out to all these cars that are driving Dorsey Drive out there. You see James in his scooter, give him the right of way and be nice. What does anybody need to tell you? God, be real.
Yeah, or
guys in a mobility scooter.
Actually, it's written in the California law. I remember the Caltrans engineer, and he tells me about this, that wherever a pedestrian wants to cross the street, wherever there isn't a crosswalk, there is a de facto crosswalk.
That's right. That's right. That is exactly right. So
people don't understand that.
I appreciate your call. I'm glad to have that. And people need to just... It just comes down to that one thing that we're always talking about, and that is
common
courtesy.
I didn't call to beat up on anybody, but I just wanted to...
No, I don't... No, we didn't take it as beating up. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Yeah, I want to say, I think James brings up a pretty valid point, is that I think we're all too much in a hurry. You know, it's like you said, someone can't slow down to let him cross a crosswalk because they're in too much of a rush to get home.
Right.
And I think that's in my opinion, it's just kind of a larger problem in our society. It's like we get so much this advertising and this stuff that's, you know, pounding our heads. You know, we can multitask. We can do more and more and more with the time we have. Well, if you can do one thing in your hour, why can't you do two, or why can't you do 10? And I think that we've had this pound into us that everyone is in a rush to try to do something else, and they don't slow down. Like, what'd they say? Time to slow down and smell the roses, right?
Yeah, they don't take the time to just stop and think about what's really happening out there. What's this guy going through in his mobility scooter? He can't all of a sudden lay scratch and has 200 horsepower under the hood and can move around like everybody else. You know, he's trying to get from point A to point B. He's done everything he can do. He's got flags up on his scooter. He's got an air horn, for God's sakes. And I think he should blast that thing off a little bit more, as far as it sounds like to me. But, people need to kind of wake up.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, being more aware of your surroundings. I know a lot of people who've ridden bicycles for a long time, and I think they're better drivers because they're more aware. They've been out there on the opposite end of that, where they're pedaling, they're on two wheels, you know, dealing with the motor vehicles. And I guess I could say, everyone out there, you could maybe think about slowing down. You know, if we could all leave 5 minutes earlier than we normally do, we might never be in a rush.
I'll
right?
tell you what. I'll simplify that even more. I just think people should take 2 seconds to think.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds like we've got Steve on the line.
Steve's on the line now.
All right. We've got Steve Davis from
Howdy.
The Bicycle Recycle Project. Brian, can I have that pamphlet back over there? Because I want to kind of refer
Absolutely.
To it while I'm talking to Steve. How you doing, Steve?
Doing well. Doing well. We got a class going on in the background.
That's so. The real deal.
It's the real deal.
Okay. Well, it looks like Brian just gave me the five-minute warning, like we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show, but I'm glad to have been able to get you on. I was really impressed with your program. I went by yesterday, and I've heard about it. We've talked about it, but I got to see it firsthand, and you are busting at the seams over there.
Yeah, it's quite the event.
You get something I didn't realize until I went over there yesterday. I thought you sold the bikes for a profit to help support the kids' program there. And your program is basically, you have the students at the school. You have three classes each day. 42-minute session classes each day at your school that you teach bicycle mechanics and maintenance and how to just take a bike in that's just broken and refurbished and make it good again, and then you give it away to a needy cause. And
correct.
And you serve very many needy causes over there.
Right.
Tell us, first thing is that you get bikes donated. And the first thing I want to talk about is people out there that are listening, if you've got a bike that you don't want anymore, that's a good working bike but just needs repair, Steve could really use these bikes because that's what his program's all about. And tell me about who you've given bikes to all of a sudden or just this week.
Okay. Firstly, let me also clarify that students who don't have bikes are also welcome to build bikes for themselves.
That's great.
But our socioeconomic classification in this area is such that most kids already have their bikes. I mean, most kids at this age already have bikes, although there are a bunch of sixth graders who have outgrown their bikes and mm-hmm. are now ready for a bigger mountain bike, for instance. So there's a lot of, or there are more sixth graders building bikes for themselves just because of all of a sudden the growth in their body size.
This is a pretty unique program that you do here too, because you know a lot of people talk about being green and recycling, but you're actually, you know, the bicycle is, you know, if people don't know by now, the bicycle is the simplest machine made by man for transportation.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And you are recycling bikes that people are tossing out and throwing away or don't want anymore. Not that that's a bad thing, because you're giving them to Steve, and that's a good thing.
Right,
and
right.
You are putting those bikes back in service, and you are giving them to people who really need them.
That's right. And so some of those people that we've given bikes to are, you know, people like Loaves and Fishes. We do a annual event down in Sacramento for the homeless. We've done the Nevada County Chernobyl Children's Project when the kids from Russia come over during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Our summer school program. You know, I do a summer school program, an after school program, and regular daily school day program. And so bikes have been given to Chernobyl. Nevada Children's Services has received bikes. The Sheriff's Department picked up 10 bikes today. Court appointed special advocates are coming by at 2:30 to pick up bikes. And on
they were
Friday,
good looking bikes too.
I'm sorry?
They were good looking bikes.
Yeah,
too.
They're nice looking
I
bikes.
Saw them.
And that's the, you know, that's one of the nice things about the contributions that we get. I mean, Rich Looney and I were working in the program last week, concerned about whether or not we were going to have enough bikes to give for like the CASA request. And that day we had two contributions of three bikes each of kid bikes, and typically kid bikes are in great shape, and so we were able to take those and go over them and do an overhaul, quick overhaul on them, and they're in beautiful shape now for today to
and
give
turn
away.
Them right back out. It's
right,
December
right.
17th today, so people out there, if you're listening, you know what? This guy's a great cause, and you know if you've got bikes you can donate and you don't want them around anymore, there's still time for Steve to get them to those in need.
Hey, Steve, this is Kurt Stockton here. I was wondering if you could just let our listeners know, if they have bicycles to donate, what is the best way to go about that and how they can
yeah.
learn more about what you've got going on.
Great question.
It would be probably the best thing would be just to call me directly at the bike shop.
And
what's
your number there?
265-1840, extension 8143.
And I see you have a website, too. Can we hit you an email through the website if
you
want to contact you that
you
way?
You bet.
And that's Bicycle Recycle Project, all one word, .com. And
right.
I will put a link on my website, in my Bike Talk area of my website, to link to your program as well. And then I owe you a Saving the World One Bike at a Time t-shirt, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. I'd be delighted.
Because Steve's got really cool t-shirts with all this really cool artwork. And he's got
yeah,
brochures. And that's a really together program. The thing that I'd like to, you know, it's a bummer that we didn't hear from you at 1:30, because I would like to talk to you more. And we'll probably have you on later shows as well, especially near the Loaves for Bread in April or March, when that is.
I wanted to talk with Don. Is he still there?
He's still here.
I'm here.
Hey, Don, how you doing?
I was just going to mention to congratulate you on what you're doing there. Everybody,
well, thank you.
Everybody thinks it's a really good service.
It's so unique.
Yeah.
It is indeed unique. You know, I wanted to say that, you know, there are a whole bunch of community-based bike programs. But there, you know, throughout the country, I'm mm-hmm. on a listserv of addresses and people who are having conversations all the time.
Yeah.
But there aren't many bike programs in schools.
I know.
So
I think it's so cool. You know, I got my start in metal shop and auto shop in high school, and
yeah.
it's my trade now.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's funny. I just kind of went that direction. But
right.
The thing that I really like is that, you're doing something because I loved how you started out this program. Give us a brief on that. You started the program buying the bikes yourself just so the kids had bikes to work on.
Yeah, you know, this was a kind of a brainstorm. It actually was a suggestion made by my wife, and I ended up going to see a program in Tucson, Arizona, and saw the Bikers program, which is a fairly well-known community-based program.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked what I saw, and I came back and I asked the principal at Seven Hills at the time if she would consider that I would start a program like that, and she said, let's give it a try. And so we were all set to do that, and I spent $5,000 of my own money just to buy the tools for the program.
Man.
And then it occurred to me that we don't have any bikes. So every weekend, for the first couple of months, I went around to the garage sales and picked up bikes so that we had bikes for kids to work on. Now that's not a problem, but in the very early stages, 10 years ago, it was something that we had to take care of.
Man, that's amazing. Then it just grew into this program. The vision I have for your program is much like the high school mountain bike league. I knew Matt Fritzinger when he was just starting that out. Now it's this big, huge thing. And Nevada Union, I think, still are the national champions. So
yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. So we've got to close it out. It's 1:59 going on 2:00 right now, so we've got to end the show. But we want to say, we apologize to all the people we couldn't take the calls from. We had the phone pretty much ringing here for the last half hour. But we are so glad that we could talk to you, Steve, and congratulations on your program.
Thank you.
And keep doing the great work. I'm going to be over at your school. If I can help you out any way personally, I'd love to.
We'd love it.
Please just call me and I'll be there.
Thank you so much, Chris.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care. Thanks, Don, for coming in.
Take care.
And thanks for everybody listening today. And if you have questions or comments and want to comment on the next show, please email through the kellybike.com website. That's chris@kellybike.com. Or hit anyone here at KVMR, and we'd love to hear what you want to talk about.
All right. It's Bike Talk here on KVMR. It just happened. When's the next Bike Talk happening, Chris?
It'll happen 3 weeks from now, and you know, I don't have my calendar up. So it's going to be in January 15-ish through 17-ish, something
right.
like that. And whatever that Wednesday is at 1 p.m.
Stay tuned. Coming up next on KVMR will be a Christmas swing.